www.rnz.
Yes, I did.
How difficult was it?
Difficult?
Why would it be difficult? Didn't you say you only had 10% deposit for your house?
10% is enough if Mortgage Masters is helping you with home loan.
Mortgage Masters can also help you with refinance or with any rental and commercial property related question. Contact Nathan Saminathan now, a certified financial planner and authorized financial advisor with over 30 years of experience in New Zealand. Call now on 0800-630-7171. Address 619 Dominion Road, Mount Eden.
Good afternoon, namaskar and welcome. This is Susigar Dunpar, 104.6 Planet FM Konkani radio program. At the outset, we have all been shocked and saddened by the recent events in Christchurch. Our hearts go to all those who are affected. I am Xavier, and we have with us Grace Saron and Arun Fonseca, our guests. A big warm welcome to both of you. Arun and Grace, maybe you'd like to say something?
Hi, everyone. This is Arun. Glad to be on the show this evening with Xavier and Grace.
Yeah, hi, this is Grace Saron. And it's wonderful to be here. So we look forward to having this chat and hope you enjoy the show. Thanks to our listeners.
Thanks both of you. Well, in life and in life journey, we face a lot of challenges of the various types. For some, these changes can be quite difficult. For others, it's a learning curve. And for a few, it brings out the best out of them. We have both Grace and Arun here. And they have been through some very difficult times, in fact, a roller coaster of life. And they belong to those few selected people or a few set of people that have not only gone through it, but have brought out the best in them. Tell us something about this in a sentence or two.
So I'll go first. I'm Grace. So as I said, I'm born and brought up in Mumbai. So I'm Chi Mumbai girl, basically. Lived in Parel for most of my life till I got married and moved to Colaba to live in the Navy quarters where my in-laws were. And professionally, I work with Western Union. I'm head of compliance for them. And enjoy what I do immensely. Arun?
I have come from Mumbai. I was working for Mahindra's and I moved over here. And I was working for Sky City, then I worked for Lendlease. I'm an accountant. And because of my failing eyesight, I had to give up my job in March 2017. And now I'm the home minister, doing everything else at home.
So what's it like, Arun, being the home minister?
I'm absolutely enjoying it. It's actually given me an opportunity to do what I really like, and I really am enjoying it. I'm having a fantastic time.
So you are now experiencing what it is to wear the pants at home?
I always wore the pants.
Now he's wearing the apron at home, that's
right. He's also doing CA, which is complete aram.
Well, I can tell you it's not complete aram.
That's very nice to hear. I do know Arun. I know he's a very good dancer, and I know he loves to sing because he was in the choir at St. Rees. But anything else that you'd like to tell us something more about growing up in Mumbai before coming here, Arun?
I basically, right from a young age, was a party man. I really enjoyed dancing, partying. When I was in school, college, organized all the dances. I think half of Bombay know me as the party boy. Oh. And I worked for Mahindra's. I enjoyed every bit of my life over there. Got married to Christine, and fortunately I met Christine, who was also a very good dancer. We'd spend the whole night dancing. I don't know why we booked a table. But we really enjoyed dancing, both of us, and till this day we are still, you know, non-stop dancers on the floor.
That's really nice. How about you, Grace?
Yeah, so me, I grew up in Mumbai. I grew up in Parel. As you know, Parel's a very multicultural place. So when other people used to struggle in class with Hindi, Marathi, I could speak it fluently. I also happened to come from a family. So come from really humble beginnings, of course. Lived mom and dad, and I have three siblings, two sisters, one brother. And we lived in a really small house in Parel. So I think that gave me a good appreciation of what I had at the time, and probably resulted in the grounding that I have. What I found was, and again, my dad was a Punjabi. So he was a Sardar, mom's a Catholic, Mangalorean Catholic. I got married to a Sardar. So I've kind of done a full circle and come back. And that's given me a good appreciation for various cultures. Living in Parel helps as well, because you're around all kind of cultures. I think that's what Mumbai taught me. Mm-hmm. Being very appreciative of other cultures, being respectful of differences, and enjoying all sorts of food. That I think shows when I look in the mirror. But
That's really fantastic. So that's can you give us one thing that you really imbibed from your living in India, that you that has, you know, made it into your, got into your personality?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Mumbai is called the city of dreams, right? So people who come to Mumbai can achieve whatever they like. What I learned from Mumbai is it's got all the hustle and bustle and stuff like that, but you can still, if you want to, have a quiet moment. You can still, you know, step away and say, okay, I live in this great city and there are lots of things happening, but I can reduce the pace of that speed as well. So, yeah, it's quite a paradox, that city. And I think I bought that when I moved to New Zealand with me.
Yeah, thank you. How about you, Arun?
The one thing that I learned in Mumbai was... there wasn't any differentiation between caste, creed, or gender. I had so many friends right in school, college, and at the workplace. I don't think I ever asked anybody what he was, whether you're Catholic or Hindu or Muslim or Gujarati or anything. And I learned to mix with everybody. Every person for me was a human being. And that is one thing that I brought with me. It was embedded in me, in my blood. And I think I came with that to New Zealand. And when I came to New Zealand, I took it around with me everywhere. And I had no problems at all.
Thank you. I'd like to say something.
I mean, I think that's one of my favorite things about Bombay as well. And one of the reasons we keep going back as a family every 2 years, you know, to make sure that we are still getting those sort of values and ideas that you only get from living in a city like that. But I mean, still, we are here now. And I'm sure you both have migrated here around the same time as most of us, which was between about 2000 to 2004. So you must have had your reasons. Could you tell us why?
Arun, do you
want to
go first?
Okay. We came here, to be precise, on the 5th of August, 2001. We can't forget that date.
Typical accountant.
Yeah.
And the reason why we came over here was because I was working in Mahindra's, and very competitive, very hectic, you know, deadlines, everything. And that was from my point of view. And from the children's point of view, there was a lot of pressure in the schools. They had to learn a whole lot of rubbish, which I didn't really like. So I started looking out, and, I had opportunities of going to Canada, going to Australia. But then I liked New Zealand because it was very laid back, you know. We had the opportunity in India, we had the money, we had everything, but there was no lifestyle, and that's the reason why we came, because we wanted to enjoy the lifestyle. We wanted our children to enjoy the arts. We wanted our children to learn the arts and to enjoy life. We didn't want them just to be working, and that's the reason why we came.
Yeah, and I think from my perspective, two reasons, right? One was definitely for our children. I used to travel from Bayinder to Nariman Point, which was a 1.5 hour commute each day one way. So I spent 3 hours commuting back and forth from work. And I was quite clear my kids will not have to do that. And when one of my really dear friends said they were moving to New Zealand, they'd applied, and my brother said he had applied, that then for us was a no-brainer. We said, let's try it. If it works, it works. And hence we put our papers. We thought it would take us a good 6 months to a year. 3 months later, we had someone call us from immigration and tell us our visas were ready. Could we send our passports? That's when I think fear kicked in. So that was one of our reasons, coming for the children. The second one is I'm an avid reader. So as I said, humble beginnings, after I finished my degree, I was working while I was studying. And everything that I earned pretty much went into studies. I went on to do my master's and MBA and stuff like that. Just enjoyed studying. The result of that was I was professionally very stifled in India. I didn't have the opportunities that I thought I should be having. I could not showcase it. And I felt if I could go to a different place, perhaps I would have those opportunities. And truly, New Zealand turned out to be the land of opportunities for me professionally. So no regrets on any front.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. I wish we had more time, because we'd really love to know the stifling part that you mentioned, and as well as the bit of rubbish part that it would be nice to have to dwell on that, but we'll probably program that at some other time. But let's get to the crux of today's show. We're talking about a slice of life, and so we're getting into a more serious discussion here. So you've both been here for the last 15 years, or maybe even more, much more than that. And you face many challenges, and we know that you have, and you know more than us. So Arun, your vision, which was gradually, you had an issue there, it faded off, and it's fading away. You have suffered a rare kind of vision impairment. Can you define the medical term and share with us some of the things you've gone through, and especially for our kind listeners to hear you?
Well, the condition that I have is called retinitis pigmentosa in medical terms. In layman's terms, it is the degeneration of the rods and the cones. Now, the rods are responsible for light in the darkness. It adjusts your retina for you to see. And the cones are for the brightness of the light. So we have about more than a million rods and cones in our eye. And as they die out, in a normal person's case, the new rods and cones get regenerated. In my case, the rods and cones are not getting regenerated. And as the rods and cones die out, my vision sort of gets impaired. Now, I have been noticing this when I was in India, but doctors couldn't pinpoint, and or they didn't really know what it was. I had, because when I went for an eye checkup, I could read everything. Even right now, when I go for a checkup, I can read everything on the board. And they look at me and they say, are you pulling our legs? You can't see. I said, no, I can't see. And it took quite a while for them to realize what it was. So basically, that's what it is.
So the rods and vision a little knowledge that I know as a science teacher is that you have the colors as well, the colors that are there. So are you having a problem with the color vision?
No, this is not color blindness.
Okay.
It's not color blindness because when I did go to the doctors and specialists, the first thing they did was they checked me out for color blindness. It wasn't color blindness. It's not sight. My number was minus 1.5 when I was a boy at the age of 10.
Okay.
And right till today, that's the same number.
Okay. So what was it that you could not... what was the impairment you couldn't see? What is it that you couldn't see?
Well, your vision just disappears. You just can't see. At the moment, I have no sight at all in my right eye.
Oh, okay.
If I close my left eye, it's all black.
Oh.
So there is no vision at all. And in my left eye, I've got patches of vision, which would be around maybe 1% at the moment.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's not peripheral vision, it's not tunnel vision, but it's patches of vision.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you mean to say that your ability to adapt to different light conditions or different environments sort of gets completely impacted on you, is it? You can't see it at all. So if it becomes too dark or too bright, you can't sort of, your eyes can't adjust to it.
Yeah, now that is correct. What you're talking about is what used to be happening in the initial stages, but my disease is now very advanced.
Oh, okay.
So at the moment, it's not like that. The light used to affect me, but I did a cataract operation in October, and it's the light does not, it affects me, but not so much. But the change in the light, yes, it definitely affects me.
So at the moment, you can't see anything in the studio here. Can you see anything in the studio?
Yeah, I can see the people here, but blurred.
Okay. Blurred, okay.
Yeah.
So is there, what's the modern, is there a modern treatment? Or are we going to talk about it probably later, is it?
Yeah. So I think Chanel had a question. Yeah.
Well, now I do know a lot about Arun's condition from growing up with his kids and, you know, but I don't know much about yours, Grace, but I do know it has been quite scary. You've had two major health scares. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So in 2005, I was put in hospital pretty much. It was life-threatening. I had an ectopic pregnancy, which resulted in a burst fallopian tube. I had gone, in fact, to the hospital the previous couple of days. I went to the GP, and the GP said to me, "You've got to go to the hospital." And it's a funny story, because while we were going to the hospital and Bali, my husband, was driving me there, I was rattling off a list of things that he should do if I do not come back, not knowing it would get to the stage it did. So obviously, went, stayed overnight, and they cleared me to go back home, saying everything was fine. That clearly was not, because I came back home. I had lunch the next day, and just before my news, I stepped into the washroom and I collapsed. My fallopian tube burst. Fortunately, it was a Sunday and the ambulance got home really quickly. And Richard, as you know, you were one of the first people who landed in the hospital with Bali. I'm told I was 80-20 chance. I think the hardest thing my husband had to do was sign a form saying go ahead with the surgery, because he was told perhaps she wouldn't make it. And the funny thing about it was it is an out-of-body experience, because there are certain things that I recollect from getting to the hospital and the surgery and stuff like that, and probably it wasn't my time. I must have gone and touched the pearly gates of heaven, and St. Peter must have said, not your time, go back. So, yeah, it took me, so I stayed in hospital for a week. It took me a good 3 months to recover from it, because it was quite a major surgery. And the funny thing that I remember of all of that was the surgeon coming to me and saying, "Oh, they shouldn't have sent you from Auckland Hospital, but you're lucky to be alive. Go out and buy a lotto ticket." So,
and did you?
Not really.
Maybe still buying. I should have. Still buying.
The second incident that I had was in 2011, when I had a stroke. Pretty much slept, woke up, had a stroke in my sleep. Completely lost my vision. So Arun, I can identify with some of the challenges you have, though very, very small in comparison to yours. I was in hospital for a few days. I was in rehab for nearly 18 months. And I had to learn things like reading, speaking. I'm told I had a brain clot which resulted in memory loss. and I live with fatigue. The what I've learned from this is, you can never put a value on health. If you've got health, I think you've got absolutely everything in life. Everything else can just follow.
Yeah, that's why they say health is wealth. Well, thank you, both of you. It was very nice to hear. I know you've gone through some very difficult situations. But I must say, Grace, you're creating brainwaves. And Arun, in spite of you, no one can see, but you're a visionary. You're really a visionary. You're an example. We'll have a few songs now, can we?
Sanje sovel to butangelo, suryo to dongrarli pongelo, ata sandru ude unailo. Ye voni ye guna undole tuja deral pole. Sanje sovel to butangelo, suryo to dongrarli pongelo, ata sandru ude unailo. Ye guna undole. Supit varna chini tal sal ka ke daant bolte li. Ora guna chi voni ti am kaan shivad melte li. Bawak bailani derak voni saul garant aileli. Vishal monachi kushal monachi voni tu am geli. Sobit varnachi nital sal ka ke daad bulteli. Bora gunachi voni ti am kaan shivad melteli. Bawak bailani derak voni zaun garant aileli. Vishal monachi kushal monachi voni tu amgeli. Ye voni ye guna undole, guna undole tuja derak pole. Sanje sovel to butan gelo, suryo to dongrarli pon gelo, ata sandr ude unailo. Ye guna undole. Kirak aso peraso husko narak asona. Derak melso voni eso mogto herak melsona. Kustadu kan tu sang maka voni tujer shinsona. Avai saman tu zo pavitr mogto kiris visor sona. Kirak aso peraso husko narak asona. Derak melso voni eso mogto herak melsona. Kustadu kan tu sang maka voni tujer shinsona. Avai saman tu zo pavitr mogto kiris visor sona. Ye voni ye guna undole. Guna undole tuja deras pole.
sanje sovel to butan gelo suryo to dongrarli pon gelo ata sunur ure unailo ye uni e guna undole guna undole tuja dera pole sanje sovel to butan gelo suryo to dongrarli pon gelo ata sunur ure unailo
Hi, today we are going to make chewy oat and raisin cookies. For this, you need 110 grams of melted butter, 110 grams of sugar, I use half brown sugar, 150 grams of porridge oats, 90 grams of flour, 100 grams of sultanas, 1 egg, and 1 teaspoon of vanilla essence. In a bowl, throw in your flour, sugar, oats, sultanas or raisins. Add to it 1 whole egg, melted butter and vanilla essence and form a nice soft cookie dough. Chill the dough in a refrigerator for 30 minutes. Make small walnut-sized balls and place apart in a greased tray. Bake for 15 minutes. Enjoy.
Welcome back to Susega Danpa, What Planet 106.4 FM. You're here with Richard, Xavier and me, Chanel, and our guests today, Arun and Grace. Now, before that, just at the end of that break there, we heard a recipe from my mother, Ivy. We'd like to add just one little tip to that. Now, when you're making your cookies, it's best to flatten them out and bake them for at least 12 to 15 minutes for the ideal chewiness. So thanks for that, Mum. Now, before the break, we were speaking about Arun and Grace's conditions that have seen them go through basically hell and back. But what we want to know is when this all started. So, Arun, you did say that you found out about your condition before you came to New Zealand. So that's before the 5th of August 2001. When exactly did it start and how was it for you at the time?
Well, doctors could not identify what my problem was. I knew what my problem was. And when I started looking back, I realized that my problem had started maybe at the age of 17 or 18 years old. I used to play hockey, and when I used to play hockey, for the short corners, I used to be standing in the goal. And I was a very good hockey player because I was in Don Bosco's. And if you remember, there was a hockey player, Surjit Singh, who was the the backs in the Indian team and a very good striker. And he used to play for Central Railway. And I would be standing in that goal over there when he used to crack that ball. And I would desperately attempt to stop it, but I could never see it. And I would, every time after that, I would go to the doctor for an eye checkup, numbers not changed. And I would say, what the hell? I can't see that ball. How, you know, and I would be very determined to stand. Others would be frightened because Surjit Singh was whacking that ball. But I would be very determined to stand in over there and stop it. And when I look back, I found that, yes, that's when it actually started. And later on, I began to realize, I went to a doctor when my elder son, Nilesh, had to wear specs, and I went to a doctor. I told him that, I cannot see. And he did my eye checkup and everything, and he said, no, there's nothing wrong with your eyes, it's psychological. I said, no, it's not psychological. And I took an appointment with him in the night, at about 8 o'clock in the night. And I told him, I said, I'm going to prove to you this is not psychological. So my son's number was way higher than mine. And I was the last appointment. He put off the lights. He put off all the lights. And the three of us started walking down the stairs. The doctor and my son, they both reached down. They were watching me struggle down the stairs. And I told him, I said, that's my problem. I cannot see. And then he sent me to Just Look for a whole lot of tests and everything. And he says, I don't know, I think it may be RP, but I'm not sure, he says. So nobody was really sure about what it was. When I was coming to New Zealand, you know, we had to do all the medicals and everything. I went for the medicals, came out with flying colors. They did all my eye checkups. They did everything. Everything was fantastic. Nobody could identify anything. But I knew I had a problem. I came to New Zealand. I started driving. I was driving. Then I realized that when I used to drive in the sun, I could see perfectly. All of a sudden, a cloud came because, you know, New Zealand weather, three weathers in a day. So I just couldn't see. The road was just nothing, blank. I can't see anything. And then I said, oh, my goodness, if somebody comes, you know, at this stage, they're going to be run over because I can't see anybody. So that's when I gave up my driving and I said, no, I can't do this anymore, he said. So I knew I had a problem. I couldn't, didn't want to go to the doctors or the hospitals because, you know, I had to have a job. If they knew that there is a medical condition, then it may hamper my prospects for a job. So, well, yes, I knew it a long time back and I had to live with it.
That is quite a thing to live with as well. But is this a gene condition or how does it happen? Is it not a lifestyle thing?
Well, as of today, nobody knows what it is. It's a very rare occurrence, 1 in 1,000, they say. And we did go to the hospital. And as I said, even when I went to the hospital over here, they did all the checkups and they couldn't find what's wrong, you know. They sent me to all the consultants. So I just played it cool and, you know, then after all the checkups and all the diagnosis and everything, then I had to actually tell them, this is the problem. This is what I got. And then they said, oh, yeah, that's what it must be, you know. So it was like that. They did a checkup on me for genes and everything, but they came back with no results. I literally had an argument with one of the doctors when I went for my last checkup a few months back because, you know, that doctor spurted out again, oh, it may be genetic. I said, can you pinpoint that it is genetic? I said, or are you assuming? I said, so anyway, we had an argument. I said, look, don't assume. I said, medical science has advanced, but not to prove that it is genetic. None of my parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, nobody in the family ever had it.
So are you getting any, I'm not right if I'm asking you the right question. Are you getting any treatment or how are you managing?
Well, there is no treatment for this in the world. So
how do you manage then? How do you cope with the day-to-day life? And
to be honest, a lot of people try to dampen my spirits and say, oh, you have a problem. But as I see it, I don't have any problem.
That's good. Fantastic.
So I'm managing with everything. I was working over here. I worked as an accountant. I was looking after 5 companies. I didn't have any aides in the office. I, just like any other normal human being, I was working on the computer. And I worked up to March 2017 without any problem. January 17 came on. I found that I was finding it difficult to read from a paper. I found that, you know, it wasn't worth the stress. I gave up my job, stayed at home. And I'm quite enjoying myself.
That's amazing. That's really, really...
So, Arun, now that you're at home, I understand you do the cooking at home.
Yeah.
Most of the times.
Yeah.
How do you manage that?
I mean, like you would manage, I would manage.
Okay.
That's a nice one.
You know, I really don't have any problem. I don't know why. I really don't have any problem. For one thing is, I don't know, I shouldn't be saying this, that my faith is strong, but I always feel God is with me. And I have no problems at all to do anything, to go anywhere. I have no problems at all. I can just do what anybody else does. It just takes me a little longer time, but I can do it.
Okay. So what about you, Grace? You would have these two events were out of the blue for you. So how did it sort of impact you as such?
Yeah, so the first time when I had the surgery, obviously, we had bought a new house. In fact, I think we'd bought a house and probably moved 10 days and then this event happened. So that was top of the mind, right? I mean, how are we going to pay the mortgage? Are we going to lose the house? Because, I mean, from what the surgeon said, it was going to be a 6 month to a year's recovery. And clearly, I didn't have that kind of, you know, financial stability to say I can sit at home for 6 months. I had to make difficult choices at that time. I was given some suggestions. As you know, you have friends and well-wishers. So there were some suggestions about you could actually take this as a complaint because the hospital discharged you when you already had a situation which could result in death. And I'm told by the surgeon that I was one of those one in a million people that survived this. So, I was given that suggestion that take it as a complaint and probably you can claim compensation. It didn't sit right with me because I preferred focusing on not the doctor that missed the diagnosis. I preferred focusing on the doctor that did what was required, the surgery that actually saved my life. So, and like you, Arun, really strong faith, really, really strong faith saw me through that really difficult phase of my life. And of course, my amazing family, my husband, my children, my extended family and some amazing friends that I have in New Zealand, and even if they were not in New Zealand, from far off countries, I could feel the love and the support that came my way. So, that helped. That definitely did.
What has happened when, you know, you're told that you're one in a million? Does that change your entire perspective on life? How does that work for someone in your position?
Absolutely, it does. It changes your entire perception of life. It did for me as well. I think I got to the realization because I've always been a planner. I've always been a person that wants order in life. I want to think about what it's going to be like this year, next year, 5 years, 10 years. And to be honest, right, as Indians, that's the way we are raised. We told to have goals and aspirations. We told to, you know, talk about how we're going to plan the next tour or the next holiday or the bigger house and the bigger cars and, you know, academic success and stuff like that. When you have an event like this, and for me it was, all that pales, absolutely pales, because you can plan absolutely everything in your life. Something like this comes out of the blue and you just have to adapt. And I had to adapt because it took me a good 4 months before I could even get into my car and start driving to get to work. So, it changes everything.
Just another perspective is when we talk about one in a million, often that person thinks, oh, I hope I'm not in that 1 million, but you're not that one. But really incredible, really, the way you've gone through this. It's something very positive, a good message for our listeners, how to cope with the stresses and the toils of hard toils of life. We'll have some music now, and we're going to hear some real fantastic music.
चंद्र मुतील चावली सान्ने भूमिर पोड़ता पुन वचरा तीचे मोतीन मुझा बेम बिरांत पोड़ता रूपणेश जळकाता मोळ बार चंद्रे मुतील चावळी चांदने भूमीर पोडता पुन वेचारातीचे मोतीन मुझ्या भेम भिरांत पोळता चंद्राच्या बांगराळ्या उजवाडांत तुझी सावळी म्हाका दिसता सावळेच्या इड्यांत कुपा मोदे तुझे रूपणेश जळकाता
You are listening to Susegat Dhanpal on 104.6. And our guest this afternoon, our really wonderful guest causing brainwaves is Grace. And our great visionary with a good message for all of us is Arun Fonseca. Arun, with this gradual fading of your vision, how has it affected your life? We have discussed that, but now can you tell us something? How are we moving forward from here?
Well, Xavier, your introduction was right. I lost my sight, but I didn't lose my vision. So I am a visionary.
That's very good.
I must tell you that I knew this was coming. I knew it would come. I have been reading on the internet about the disease, and I know that there may be a time when I will not be able to see at all. I know, you know, it can come, it may not come, I don't know, but, well, that's what it is. And I am not in the least bit bothered about it. As I said, I know God is with me. He's been with us. Right from the time we came into New Zealand, even before we came here, I know I gathered my two sons. They were very small, 7 years and 13 years. And, of course, my wife was with me. And we had a little discussion and said, we are going to New Zealand, and this is what is going to happen. I said, be ready. You know, you're getting now bread, butter, jam, but maybe when you go to New Zealand, you may have just bread and water. So get ready for it. But we are going there. We are going to make our life. And we are going to fight till we do it. And well, as a family, we came here. My family was very, very supportive, I must say. Especially my wife, when she wasn't driving in India. But when we came here and I couldn't drive, she took over the wheel, did a fantastic job. She did everything for the family. Dropping me to work, picking me up from the station, dropping the boys to school, dropping the boys to college, picking them up at any time. There were times when she used to go to work, come back, she used to be tired, and she'd say, just give me 5 minutes to sleep. And she would sleep for 5 minutes, and then she would be back on the wheel. So I must say my family was very, very supportive. The other thing was that when I was having a problem in certain jobs because of my sight. My wife always was very assuring, you know, if ever there was a problem, she always said, don't worry about it, I will take care of you. That was what propelled me. Every time she said, don't worry, I will take care of you, man, that just made me go about 100 steps forward. That was one thing I must give her full credit. She did a great job for the family. She worked very hard for the family. She did a great job for the family. And that is what motivated me. I must tell all you listeners that you got to believe in yourself. When you take the first step, it's a very reluctant step. But if you're bold enough to take that first step, the other steps are very easy. And that's what I've noticed. Also, I must tell you that the community in New Zealand has been very, very helpful. I have traveled most parts of the world. There's no place like New Zealand.
Thanks, Arun. That was really nice. And again, from Sasika Dunpar and all our listeners, hats off to Christine. She's sitting in the corner here, but a fantastic job, really well done and much appreciated by your lovely husband. Grace, let's move on to you now. You tell us something. How did you manage and how did it go from there?
Yeah, so I echo what Arun said. I think it's really important to put life in perspective when you have these kind of events. I think the two things that really worked for me was an absolutely supportive and amazing family. As you know, with my stroke, I had a brain clot, which resulted in memory loss as well as vision loss. And my husband was just absolutely amazing. Even now, when I have blanks, when I'm talking about certain things, and some of it is like just completely wiped out, we'll talk about stuff and I completely forget and it gets me really frustrated. He jumps in there and completes the sentence for me or paints the picture, which takes me back and reminds me. So just an absolutely amazing person. And it's really funny because when Bali and I met, because we come from different cultures, people actually said to us, this marriage won't last. We've been married for 31 years and we've been friends for 33. So, yeah, thank you. Definitely want to say thank you to him. My amazing children, I've got two beautiful daughters who are like absolute rocks of the family. And I've got a wonderful son-in-law, a son that we never had. So when we have challenges, we sit down and have always done it. We sit down as a family and decide and discuss and we take into consideration what needs to be done. So I think from my perspective, having support from my family, I've got some amazing friends in New Zealand who are like family to me. I've got my sisters back in India. I've got my brother in Perth. And I know their love and well wishes always flow through this family. So, what's to be fearful of, right, when you've got that level of support? And as Arun spoke about the community in New Zealand, absolutely amazing. I want to share one incident. When I had my stroke, because I used to be so disoriented and I'd started going to work, I stopped driving. You see, because my vision was impacted, I stopped driving for nearly a year. So I used to get on the train and I got on the train once and I got to Britomart, which is where I used to work. And I got to the station and I had a complete mind blank. I didn't know why I was there. I didn't know where I had to go, who I had to meet. And I didn't know what to do. I just sat on this bench in Britomart and thought to myself, okay, what am I going to do from here? And I must have started sobbing because there was a lady that just came and sat by me, a complete stranger, and asked me if I was okay. And I said, I don't know why I'm here. I don't know why I'm here. And she asked me, can I call you? Can I call someone? Can I get someone to help you? And because I didn't remember who my husband was or my kids were, I couldn't give her a number. She sat there for 45 minutes, just sat and held my hand while I calmed down and probably realized that, okay, yeah, I'm actually on my way to work. So that's my experience with community in New Zealand. Just absolutely amazing. And I think Christchurch proved that, right? One person who set out to break people actually brought everyone far, far closer than they were before. So, yeah.
Do you think that the fact, and you rightly said, you know, in New Zealand is one of those countries and one of these places that a stranger is family? And I've noticed that as well. So do you think that the environment that we're in here in New Zealand has sort of impacted the way your outlook on this as well, how you see life and how you've taken it on board?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when I moved from India, life was a race, as it is in a major city like India. Moving to New Zealand has taught me that you can slow down. It doesn't have to be a constant treadmill while you're running at 150 k's an hour, so you can relax. We chose New Zealand because it's a modern Western country. But there's a real sense of family and community here, which is why we choose to come here and raise our children. Because as you know, when we came, my kids were, my elder girl, Jessie, was less than 12 years. Sasha was less than 4 years. So they've pretty much been raised here, and they call it home as we do now. So, yeah, absolutely.
Arun, would you like to say a few words, one in one sentences? What's your message to the community? I think both of you all have underscored the importance of family and community in the support that you receive. But one sentence of a message from you.
One very important message I would like the listeners is that, number one, you believe in yourself. And number two, if anybody in the family has a problem, support that person and encourage that person. They will do very well in New Zealand.
Yeah. So with that, to Balli we say balle balle, and to Christine we say hats off again, and to all your lovely families, and to our wonderful listeners, the message for you is to face whatever threatens you in life positively. Enjoy life, enjoy love, and keep loving. From all of us in Sosegad Dunbar, good evening and take care until we meet again next Saturday.